Okay, we're beginning here, four lines down on the top of Mem Hey Omed Aleph. We had the end of the Braita yesterday that was brought from Tani Shilo that said, Sarcha, if she sinned or had an extramarital affair while she was a Ne'ara, Ulisof Bagra, and then she matured and aged before she was brought to Din, Tidon B'chenek, then her execution or punishment, death penalty, will be Chenek, which is the normal punishment for a shadish. That's a normal punishment for a woman who has an extramarital affair. On the other hand, the Na'ara Murasa, has a unique din that is associated with her. How broad we look at this din, whether it's just by a Na'ara Murasa, it also includes Motzi Shemra, is dependent on the upcoming Gemara. But basically, the Tani Shila says that if the woman, at the time that the Gemara din, the sentencing is handed down, had she sinned at that moment, she would have only been subject to the death penalty of Chenek. Then that's the punishment she gets, even though the infraction took place while she was a Na'ara HaMurasa. And therefore, we see from this that Bagrut, aging, actually affects the punishment, even though the infraction happened prior to her aging. On that, the Gemara challenges that and says, is that really true? Lememra, d'chol heicha d'ishtane gufa ishtane katlo. Anytime her body changes, the death penalty changes. Her maturing, her turning into a bogeret, changes the death penalty or the sentencing that she will face. Now, in terms of Tani Shila, the authenticity of such a braita is going to be much more questionable because it's not found from the Beit Midrash, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya. In general, the braitot that are considered to be authentic and braitot that we would use to establish what's written in a Mishnah or to establish the memra of an Amora are braitot that came from the Beit Midrash, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya. If we bring a braitot that comes from another source, like over here, Tani Shila, then the Gemara is going to be much more suspect about the authenticity of that braitot, and generally will search for an additional braitot or Tanaic work to support this idea in order to establish whether it is actually true, it needs to be amended, or maybe there is a machloket tanaim over here. So at first, the Gemara challenges that statement in Tani Shila and says, is it true that a change in the maturity of the girl, the age of the girl, actually changes her death sentence? Very many. Na'ara ha-mirasa. We have a young girl, a na'ara, between the age of 12 and 12 and a half, murasa, has erusin, is engaged halachically. Shizinta, that had an extramarital affair during that period of time. And then when she was already of age, meaning that she now seemingly has married her husband, and then her husband is Motzi Shemra, so between the period of time of Irusin to the period of time of Nisuin, she actually changes from a Na'ara to a Bogeret. And at that time, her husband comes and claims, Lo matzati lebitcha bitulim. He says, when I married this woman, she was not a bitula. So now, in that instance, if he's found to be problematic and lying about this, who ain't a loket, ve'ainu notain me'asela. He does not get malkot, and he does not pay the fine or penalty that is normally associated with Motzi Shemra. We'll see later in the Gemara today why that is, but let's, for now, suffice to say that the parsha of Motzi Shemra is said by a ne'ara, and since this girl is no longer a ne'ara, those penalties do not apply to the husband. He, vizomameha, makdimim lebeit askila. She, and the edim zomamim, that possibly testified falsely against her, makdimim, we rush them to the beit askila. So Gemara asks the obvious question. He, vizomameha, how is it possible that both she is subject to the death penalty, as well as these edim zomamim? So how could that be? Ella, o he, o zomameha, makdimim lebeit askila. So don't read he, vizomameha, as a vavachibur, but rather as a vavachiluk. It's he or zomameha, makdimin lebeit askila, depending which one of them is guilty in this case. We have a deem that come along and testify to the fact that this woman had an extramarital affair while she was a na'ara hamirasa. If the edim are found to be telling the truth, then this woman will be put to death. Because of that, she'll be subject to the death penalty. On the other hand, if other edim come and say about these edim that are testifying against this woman, Imanu Aitim, you were with us, there's no way you could testify about this case, then they're found guilty of, quote-unquote, lying about these circumstances, then they are punished, they get punished with the punishment they were trying to impose on this young girl, and that is skila. So they would be subject to skila. Obviously, these are mutually exclusive, because if the edim are telling the truth, then the woman is put to death. If edim are lying, then if it was through hazama that they were found to be lying, that others said that you were with us, then the woman is exonerated in that case, because the edim are no longer telling the truth about her having an extramarital affair. Of course, you can have cases where both of them are put to death, where first of all, you have other edim that are testifying about the woman, and she is going to be put to death anyway, but these edim are found to be edim zomimim. Or you have a third set of edim, they come and disqualify the second set of edim. So that will then reinstate the first set of edim, and then you'll have edim zomimim that die as well as her. But the Gemara here assumes that generally these are mutually exclusive, we're not going to have so many sets of edim, and therefore it's either her or the edim are going to be put to death. Now, in terms of makdimim, Rashi says, what does it mean, makdimim? It means that we are yashkim baboker l'sham. We go right away. They have no way to escape from their sentencing, from their punishment, which is that of skila. It's so obvious that they get skila that we just rush them to that conclusion. But what you do see over here is that the punishment remains skila. So despite the fact that this girl clearly became a bogeret, and at that point in time is when the husband came to make the claim, that means that the sentencing was when she was a bogeret, even though the infraction took place while she is a nara, nevertheless the punishment remains skila and does not change over to chenek. So from that, we're challenging this breita of Tani Shilo. How could it be that Sarchav Lesof Bogra Tidon Bechenek? He seems to indicate that her age or status at the time of sentencing is more important to determining the penalty rather than at the time of the infraction. And here we have a breita which seemingly says just the opposite, which is that she is governed by the time of her infraction and not by the time of her sentencing. So Amar Rava, Rava says, I don't think you can bring that as a proof. Motzi Shemra Kamart? You're bringing your proof from Motzi Shemra. Shiny Motzi Shemra, de Chidush Hu. Motzi Shemra has its own world. Let's think about this. There is a Nara, and a Nara Hamurasa. This is a young girl who is a Nara, who was engaged halakhically. If she has an extramarital affair during that period of time, and then a deem come and testify that she did so, then she will be subject to the death penalty of skila. On the other hand, if a deem come and say that she had this infraction, she had this extramarital affair after she was already married, she's an eshadish, she's subject to chenek. She gets the punishment of the death penalty of chenek. What we saw from Tani Shilo is that all depends on the sentencing and not the time of the infraction. As long as she's sentenced, obviously the infraction would have to be while she was a ne'ara, but she'd also have to be sentenced at the time that she's a ne'ara, and then she would be subject to the death penalty of skila. If the sentencing happens at a later time, then she would get the punishment of chenek, which would be the punishment she would get if the infraction was at that point in time, because she's no longer a ne'ara. That's one way that this could play out. The other way that this could play out is that instead of Edim showing up in Beit Din and testifying about her behavior, the husband comes to Beit Din and makes a claim against this woman. Comes to Beit Din and says, Lo matzati lebitcha bitulim. He says, I married this woman and she was not a bitula. Now based on the husband's claim, we have two paths over here. Either the husband's speaking the truth, and if we get Edim to support his contention, then this woman is subject to the death penalty. Her penalty is skila. On the other hand, if the husband is found to be lying or incorrect in his information, that's what we call motzi shemra. He was casting allegations about this woman that were untrue, and therefore he's penalized. He has to pay the mea kesef, he gets malkot, and he has to marry this woman, he can't send her away. And we'll see further on much more about what happens to the man himself. Now both of those cases deal with nara murasa. Tani Shila seemingly is speaking about a generic case where Edim came and testified about the woman. The braita that we brought to undermine that position was speaking about a case of Motzi Shemra. And what Rava proposes over here is that Motzi Shemra has a different rule than other items. And that is because Daha nechnasa l'chupa, in a case where the woman enters the chupa, velo nivala, but she does not yet have bi'ah with her husband, be'alma, if it was any other instance, any other case, vizinta, and she was mizaneh, bechenek, her punishment would be chenek. Vili Motzi Shemra, biskila. But in the case of Motzi Shemra, the resultant punishment would be skila. Alright, so first of all, the word ba'alma here is somewhat controversial, and depending on how you read it, or whether it's included or not, it might influence what's being said over here. We're first going to go with Rashi's explanation of what's happening over here. And he says that basically, a case of a Nara Murasa, who then is Nichnas the Chupa, she has Nisu in with her husband, and then she does not have Bi'ah with her husband, so she now remains a Bitula at this point in time. If at that point in time she has an extramarital affair, her punishment will be Bechenek, because she's a regular Eshadish now, she's no longer a Nara Bitula or Nara Murasa, and therefore she's subject to Chenek and not to Skila. Now in terms of Velo Nivala, they did not have Bi'ah, that we'll see actually on tomorrow's daf, or we mentioned later in today's daf, but the real source is, in tomorrow's daf, is that there's a machloket between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, whether the husband actually has to have Bi'ah in the case of Motzi Shemra with his wife in order to come and make his claim in the court. Because he comes and says, Lo Matzat Lebitra Bitulim. Does that mean because he himself knows that? Or he found out the information from somewhere else, he has evidence to the contrary? So that machloket is influencing what is being said here, that Velo Nivala. But the same would be true if Nivala, even if he had Bi'ah with her, this woman has an extramarital affair. Vizinta b'chenek, then the punishment would be chenek. V'ilu motzi shemra, in the case of motzi shemra, the punishment would be skila. Now that is because the classic case of motzi shemra is a case where she has an extramarital affair while she's an arusa, and then the husband marries her, has nisuin, and then he sleeps with her. And when he sleeps with her, he says, lo matzat lebitcha bitulim. That's a classic case. That's what the Torah seems to describe. He comes to court and says, I didn't find bitulim to your daughter. So this is clearly post nisuin. So you see here that generally, after Nisuin, the status of this young girl will change. If she was an Nara Murasa, her punishment for an extramarital affair would be Skila. If she goes to Nisuin, even if she's still a Ne'ara, and technically even if she's still a Bitula, if she has Nisuin already, then an extramarital affair is basically Eshadish, and she'll be subject to Chenek. Nevertheless, in the case of Motzi Shemra, her din remains the same even after she gets married. And that is, if she had the extramarital affair while she was at Nara Murasa, then she has Nisuin, and at that point of Nisuin, the husband makes the claim against her, and she's brought to court, and we figure out what happened. Over there, she's subject to the din of Skila, despite the fact that she's already a Nisua. So therefore we see from this, that in a Stam case of a girl being a Nara HaMurasa to a Nara HaNisua, her din will change in that instance. Nevertheless, when it comes to the case of Motzi Shemra, even after Nisuin, her din remains Skila. So what Rova is saying is, don't be so surprised that the same thing is true by Bogeret, by the change Ishtane Gufa. Over here, we're talking about Ishtane, her halachic status changed. So in a normal case, Nara Murasa, the changes into a Nara HaNisua, her halachic status changes, and her din changes. Nevertheless, by Motzi Shemra, despite the fact that she was a Nara Murasa and now is a Nara HaNisua, despite that fact, her din does not change and she remains subject to the punishment of Skila. So that would be the same thing over here. Tani Shila is talking about a change in the girl's body. She matures. So she goes from being a Nara to a Bogeret. Tani Shila is talking about cases besides Motzi Shemra. Over there, when you change or when you mature, then the girl changes from being a Nara to a Bogeret. Bogeret dictates what her punishment will be. She's no longer a Nara HaMurasa. On the other hand, when it comes to Motzi Shemra, so too over there, and that's what was brought here from the Breita, which is that by a Motzi Shemra, if it happened when she was a Nara, and then she was Bagra, Hotzi Ala Shemra, that after she became a Bogeret, the whole incident of Motzi Shemra took place, then at that point, she remained subject to Skila, because we see that in other cases, by Motzi Shemra, the fact that her status has changed has no impact on her punishment. Now you do have to ask, then why is it that the husband is not subject to the same rules, and why does he not punished in that case, even after she becomes a Nisua? That might have to do with the nature of the Psukim and the Drashot that we're going to see later in today's daf. But therefore, going to Rashi, the parallel here is that just like by the case of Arusat and Nisua, where there is a halachic status change, so too where there is a physical change from an Arat to a Bogeret, by normal cases of extramarital affairs, there is a change in the din. And that'll be true of Tana and Shiloh, and that's true even when you're comparing against Motzi Shemra from a Arusat and Nisua. Whereas when it comes to Motzi Shemra, the halachic change does not impact on the change in the din, which is that even after she's in Yisua, she's still subject to the punishment or penalty of Skila. Because the classic case of Motzi Shemra is where the husband comes after Nisuin and makes a claim that she had an extramarital affair while she was in Arusa, and she's subject to Skila. So too we'll say about the Braita that we quoted, Motzi Shemra that goes from being a Nara to a Bogeret, she's still subject to the punishment of Skila. Then Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, comes along and says, Amalei Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, L'Rova, Dilma ki chadit rachmana, heched lo ishtani gufa, or heched ishtani gufa lo chadit rachmana. Maybe the Torah has a chiddush by Motzi Shemra only when her halachic status changes, but her physical status does not change. But who says that that is also true, or who says we can extrapolate that to her body changing as well? What Rav Huna Breder Yeshua is saying to Ravo is, you are speculating over here that Motzi Shemra is a chiddush. Well, once you speculate that it's a chiddush, that means that we minimize the chiddush that is said. The only thing we know from the Torah is that if she changes from a Nara Murasa to a Nara HaNisua, then over there the punishment remains Skila, because that's the classic case of Motzi Shemra. So if that's a chiddush, who says you can extrapolate that from the din there over to a case where she has physical change, where she moves from a Nara to a Bogeret? That is not necessarily a pol yotzei, because you're not talking about a logical, you're talking about a chiddush of the Torah. So the Torah is mechadesh over there by the case of the halachic change. Who says the Torah is mechadesh that by the case of the physical change in the girl? And so because of that, Rav Huna Breder Yeshua rejects this distinction that Rav is making between Motzi Shemra and other cases of extramarital affairs. El Amar of Nachman Yitzchak, Ishtane, Velo Ishtane, Tanaehi. But rather, Nachman Yitzchak says this issue of whether at the time of her sentencing, she is subject to the penalty from the time of the infraction or the penalty of her current status, that is a Machloket Tanaim here. And we'll see in a second what Machloket Tanaim is. That's the way Rashi reads it, and Tosafot brings support to that reading of Rashi. And one of the things that he does in order to support that position is maybe even take out the Girsa with the word Ba'alma in it, because Ba'alma doesn't fit so well according to that reading. Because Ha Nichnasad Chupav Luni Va'ala Ba'alma Vizinta Bechenek. Ba'alma over there implies that it is not true by the case of Motzi Shemra. And that's not necessarily so correct, because we'll see in a second the way that Rashbam explains it makes it that that word Ba'alma has significance to it. And that is Tosafot brings from the Rashbam that Shiny Motzi Shemra Dechirshu Shrei Nichnachasla Lechupav Loni Vala, in a case where she gets married, has Nisuin, but has yet to have Biyah with her husband, Ba'alma below Tzei Shemra, in a case where there is no Motzi Shemra and the husband doesn't bring a claim against her, Vizinta, and she has an extramarital affair over there after the time of Nisuin, then she's subject to Chenek. Vilo Motzi Shemra Ki Haigavna. Motzi Shemra in that exact situation, Shizinta Achar Nisuin B'Skila. If the Znut took place afterwards, the way Rashi reads it, the Znut still took place while she was in Arusa. The question is, when was the din brought? The din was brought after the husband married her. There was Nisuin. And after that Nisuin, he brings the claim against her. And so the sentencing is that point. But the infractions took place when she was in Aramurasa. What the Rashbam is Mechadesh over here is that the infraction actually took place after the Chuppah. She got married, didn't have Biyah with her husband yet, and then had an extramarital affair. That will be governed by the same rules of a Nara Hamurasa. And that's the Chiddush that Rava is saying over here about Motzi Shemra. And he's Medayeket out of the word Ba'alma, which is the Ha'nichnasa the Chupa v'no Nivala. And he says it's Meduyak. When it says that she went into the Chupa and did not have Biyah yet, the Gemara is exact about that. She didn't have Biyah yet. Because once she has Biyah, then there's no more of these rules, even by Motzi Shemra. But she didn't have Biyah yet. So she's in Nisua without Biyah with her husband. Be'alma, in cases besides Motzi Shemra, Vizinta, at that point in time, she does the Znut, Bechenek. She will be subject to the punishment of Chenek for the extramarital affair at that time. Vilu Motzi Shemra, Biskila. If she had Znut at that time for Motzi Shemra, she would be Chayevet Skila. So the Rashbam reads the word Be'alma, and he is Midayik out of the word Be'alma. That means that in this scenario, in a normal case, should be a shadish and subject to chenek. Case of Motzi Shemra, if she has the znut at that time, she would still be subject to skila. And so therefore, the Rashbam reads that word ba'alma, but he says there that there's a huge difference then between Motzi Shemra and other cases. And therefore, according to the Rashbam, the real chiddush by Motzi Shemra is even after Nisuin, she could still be subject to the punishment of skila. If she has znut, even after Nisuin, she'll be still subject to that penalty of skila. So you can't bring any proof from the cases of Motzi Shemra, because that's a chiddush gadol that we don't find by regular cases of extramarital affairs. And then Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua challenges that idea and says, over there you're talking about a halachic change in status, versus we're here, we were talking about a physical change in status. Maybe the chiddush of the Torah is only about that halachic change in status from an arusah to nisua. Maybe it's not true by the case of Nara to Bugaret. And therefore, Rav Nachman Yisrael says that offers the other alternative, which is that it is a machloket tanaim. As Tosfos points out, the Rashbam Shita reads much easier into the sugya here, including into the Braita of Tanishilo, as well as into the word Ba'alma. Nevertheless, there's one, I'd say, fatal flaw with the whole Shita, which is that it turns out then that the girl's din will depend on who brings her to court. If she has not, after Nisuin, before she had Bia with her husband, if the husband brings her to court, then she'll be subject to the punishment of Skila. If other Edim come and testify and bring her to court, then she'll be subject to Chenek. And that seems very strange, that the party bringing her to court will determine the punishment that she receives. It seems much more likely that her punishment will be determined by either her status at the time of the infraction, her status at the time of the sentencing, but her in general. Why should it have anything to do with who brings her to court or who accuses her in court as to what the punishment is? And that's really the one weakness in the Pshat of the Rashbam, even though it fits much better into the reading of this sugya. Rashi's Shita, easier to explain, but much harder to fit into the words of the sugya, both in the Alma, and as Tosfos points out, in the Tanishila, you have to play around with some of the earlier cases to make it fit this Shita of Rashi. Nevertheless, now we're in the conclusion that there is actually a Machloket Tanaim over here, and that is the Tanan. We have a Mishnah in Oriot. Chatu ad shlo nitminu. They sinned before they were appointed to the position. This time at either a Kohen Hejot that was becoming a Kohen Gadol, or a regular layperson that was becoming the Nasi. When it comes to a Kurban Chatat, lay people bring a Si'ira or a Kivsa. On the other hand, a Nasi brings a special Kurban, which is the Kurban Nasi, which is a Sa'ir. And the Kohen Gadol brings a par Kohen Gadol. So they have special chataot for the Kohen Gadol and special chatat for the Nasi. What happens if they sinned while they were still lay people or regular Kohen? And then they were appointed to their positions. Achlo nitmenu v'nitmenu, and then they were appointed. Harihen kehejotot. The Tanakhama says they're like hejotot and they bring a regular chatat. Basically, what's clear from here, what's governing is the time of infraction. Rabbi Shimon Omer, im no dalahem achlo nitmenu. If they knew about the infraction, meaning that they had knowledge of the infraction, they knew they had to bring a chatat before their appointments, chayavim, then they have to bring the korban chatat that is associated with a hedyot, which is a seira or a kivsa. Mishinit menu, if they had the infraction while they were hedyotot, and then they were appointed turim, at that point in time, then they do not bring a korban, because you have a problem here. Their infraction was done while they were hedyotot, and then the knowledge of those infractions only came to them when they're really chayav, a different korban. And so at this point in time, they're really obligated to bring the korban of an asi, or korban of a kohen gadol, but they can't bring that korban because they had their infraction when they were a hedjot. So since the chait and the idiyah were not at the same time, they're now blocked out of bringing a korban. But you see, according to Rabbi Shimon, the time of, quote-unquote, sentencing, or idiyah, is important. Whereas the Tanagama says the time of infraction is what governs over here. So this is seemingly the machloket that we were looking for, which is this difference between whether you focus on the time of the infraction or you focus on the time of the sentencing or the time of the yediyah, the knowledge of the sin which would obligate the individual and bring the korban. And that's what governs. The Tanagama seemingly says it's governed by the infraction. Rabbi Shimon seemingly says that it's governed by the time of knowledge or the time of sentencing. Now, as Tosafot points out over here, it's not so simple that the Gemara brings this as a proof, because over here we're talking about a halachic change in status. We're not talking about a shinui haguf. We're not talking about a change in the physical traits or characters of these individuals. We're simply talking about a change from an appointment, from being a layperson to an asir, or a kohen gadol to being a kohen gadol. So Tosafot says, first of all, maybe that distinctions are only according to Rava, who suggested a motzi shemra as a chiddush. But according to Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua, who rejects that distinction and says that it's all the same, it's not a chiddush at all, then we would not make that distinction between shinui guf and shinui halachically, and therefore this Mishnah is a fine proof. That's one thing. The other possibility, Tosfot says, is that the whole proof here is from Rabbi Shimon. The Tanagama is not really so relevant to here, but all we're bringing from Rabbi Shimon is that there is support for this position of Tanei Shiva, that the time of sentencing or the time of knowledge has impact, and Rabbi Shimon supports that in Tanei Shiva. Now, that's only a proof to the one side, not to the other. And that is where Tosafot says, that's because Tanei Shiva is a brayta that is not from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya. So here we want to find another brayta or a Mishnah that supports that position. So Rabbi Shimon supports that. That's all we're looking for. As far as the other brayta that we brought, that position or that brayta was already a brayta of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya, that we have enough support for. We don't need to bring evidence to validate the authenticity of that other brayta. And therefore, the only focus here is on Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon showing you that that shita of Tana Shilo makes sense. Now the Gemara says, Imur dishmainin le Rabbi Shimon, dazil af batar yidia. All we see from Rabbi Shimon is not that he exclusively focuses on the time of sentencing or the time of yidiyah, but just that also he goes by that. He says, well, you had the infraction here, and we also have the yidiyah here, so the two of them together cause you a problem. Dazil batar yidiyah, velo azil batar chada misha meitle. Where do we ever see that Rabbi Shimon focuses solely at the time of the knowledge of the chet, to the time of sentencing, to the exclusion of the time of the infraction? So Rabbi Shimon over here says, yes, yidiyah is also relevant. Therefore, I have an infraction at this time, yidiyah at this time, I can't solve the problem. But he never says that the yidiyah is the governing factor over here. Just like we're trying to say by Tana Shilo that the sentencing is the governing factor, and that the time of infraction really has no impact. Because Imkain like the Korban ki dahashto. If that was the case, that Rabbi Shimon really believed that we go batar the sentencing or batar the yediyah alone, then they should just bring a Korban based on their current status, which is Mashuach. Kohen Mashuach, the Kohen Gadol brings a par, and then a Si brings a Seir. So therefore we don't have strong evidence to the fact that Rabbi Shimon really is supportive of that position of Tani Shila. Now Tosafot does point out a flaw in the logic over here, which is maybe that Rabbi Shimon does agree to Tani Shila, and for the same reason that he says the din over here. He says, I'm not sure which should govern over here, or maybe both things should govern over here. So which means that both the time of the infraction and the time of the knowledge should govern. And the same thing by Tani Shila. The time of the infraction and the time of the sentencing should govern, and therefore I have to choose what to do. In the case of a Korban, he's stuck, because he has to either bring a Korban of a regular lay person, which is a Sira or Kivsa, or bring the Korban of a Kohen Gadol or a Nasi, which is either a Par or a Seir. And in a sense, they're mutually exclusive. I can't bring both Korbanot. No one Korban subsumes the other Korban in it. And therefore, I'm stuck. Since I'm stuck, I'm in a catch-22. I say, just don't bring the Korban. On the other hand, by the case of Tani Shila, I'm now faced with the choice. I can go after the time of the infraction, which is subject to a death penalty by Skila, or I can go after the time of the sentencing, which is subject to a death penalty of chenek. So I don't know what to do. We know from the Gemarot in Sanhedrin, that means when you have two mitot, and we're not sure which mitah the person deserves, they get the lighter punishment. So over there, if we give them chenek, mimonov shach, we've covered at least what we were supposed to. If we were right, and they deserved chenek, then fine, they got chenek. Even if they deserve skila, we give them a lighter form of punishment. And so fine, we didn't give them skila, but we still gave them the death penalty, and that would be allowed. So maybe Tani Shilo is saying the same thing as Rabbi Shimon, and that he's uncertain as to which one governs. But over there we have a solution, which is give Rechanek, because we can give one is subsumed in the other. Over here by Rabbi Shimon, by the Korbanot, one is not subsumed in the other, and therefore the result is Patur. So Tosafot says, I don't understand why the Gemara has a difficulty saying, oh, Rabbi Shimon doesn't just focus on sentencing. Maybe Tani Shilo also doesn't just focus on sentencing. So there are those that want to suggest that the answer to Tosafot's question is that you're looking at the death penalty in a wrong manner, which is that in cases where we have to give the person a death penalty and we assume the death penalty, then if you give them a lighter form of the death penalty because we can't execute with a more harsh punishment, then that's fine. But when you're trying to determine the ikar halacha with regards to something, we don't say, okay, we have a choice, we're not sure if it's chenek or skila, give them chenek. That's not the way we would determine a halachic decision with regards to what death penalty they're subject to, including the fact that it might raise the issues of hachrat safek, because we don't know which hachra'ah to give them. Elohim Kane, you follow the shitot that say that you can just give hachra'ah the mita, but otherwise you don't know which hachra'ah you're giving them. Is it for chenek or for skila? And that could raise all such of issues. So some answer to Tosafot in that manner, which is that when there are exogenous variables preventing us from giving a death penalty, then we can opt for the lower of the death penalties. But if you're talking about the Ikar Din, the halacha of the sentencing of an individual, there you have to know whether it's the sentencing, what is the proper halacha. You can't say, oh, I pick chenek because I had a choice between chenek and skila, so I just picked chenek. We need to know, is it chenek or it's skila? That has to be Mi'ikar Adin. So now, Hamarlei Rabbi Yochanan Letano, Tnei Tidon Biskila. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan, when there was someone presenting Breitot in front of him, say, Tidon Biskila, that unlike the response of Tanishila, which is at the time of sentencing governs, and therefore she gets chenek, Rabbi Yochanan seems to indicate that we give her skila. V'amai, Naraha Murasa Marachmana, V'abogerati. Why should we follow that position of Rabbi Yochanan? What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan's position? Well, here we have the Torah sailing to us that skila is for Nara Murasa, and the girl that we're sentencing in front of us is a Bogeret. Some Rabbi Lo Amakra, Hane'ara. When it says Hane'ara, it means Hane'ara Shaita Kvar. Nara doesn't mean that she currently is a Nara. It's not you, Hane'ara means the Nara at the time of the infraction, Shaya Kvar. So this is the reasoning behind that position as to why we say that we don't read the Parsha literally, and instead we say that the Nara that's meant in the Pasuk doesn't mean Nara currently, but Nara that was once a Nara when the infraction took place. As Rashi points out, when it comes to the sentencing of the Nara Hamurasa, it says over there, Votziu et Nara, Velo Kata Votziua, that you just take her out. Why does it repeat the word and say, Votzi et Hane'ara? Who is this Hane'ara? Not the Nara now, Hane'ara that was once before. It's referencing back to the Ayida, the Nara that we knew that had the infraction before. Not that it's telling us now that she's a Nara, but rather referencing back to the time of the infraction. Samarle Rabbi Chananya, the Rabbi Law, Iocha, Milka Nami Luke, Umeyasela Nami Lishalim. So according to the way Rabbi Yochanan is learning this, that the age of the girl at the time of sentencing is not relevant, then why is it, and we saw this from the Braita that we quoted before, that when the husband brings her at the time that she's a Bogeret and says that she was not a Betula when he married her, and we find that he's lying, he's not subject to the penalties of Motzi Shemra because she's a Bogeret. But the way that Rabbi Yochanan is reading it, Hane'ara indicates that it has nothing to do with her current status, it has to do with the status at the time of the infraction. Amarlei, it says, Rachmana Nitzlan Mahai Dato. Hashem or the Torah should save us from this type of thinking. So Adarabo, Rachman Yitzlan Midata Didoch, says back to him, no, the Torah should save us from your type of thinking. What I'm saying makes a lot of sense here. Why aren't we consistent between the position of the husband, and if she's a Bogeret, he should be penalized then, just like she's penalized, as if she was a Nara Murasa. Why should there be any reason for distinction? On the other hand, Rabbi Yilah disagrees. Now, he didn't explain, as Rashi says, his position, because it was nuanced, the difference between them, and the Gemara now is going to explain why he thought the whole question of Rabbi Chananya was lacking in basis and didn't make any sense. The time am I. What's the reasoning over here? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avin. V'itema Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avo. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avin, or some say Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avin, says, Zu Maseha Garmula. The punishment of this young girl is because of the extramarital affair that she had. When was that infraction taking place? When she was a Nara Hamurasa. And therefore, when we bring her to trial and sentence her, it's based on the improper act, the infraction which took place while she was a Nara. On the other hand, what here obligates the man in terms of Motzi Shemra? B'zeh akimat sfatav garmulo. What causes the man the problem is what he said when he spoke. His being Motzi Shemra is what causes him the problem. So now, Zuma ser garmula kishi zanai nara zanai. Her actions are what caused her the problem. When she had the extramarital affair, she had that when she was a ne'ara. Vizaki matzfatav garmulo. His problem or his infraction here is that he lied. And he said something that was not true about this girl. Emad kamechayev. When does he become chayev? Hayishata. Vayishata bogeretavi. When does he become chayev? When he brings her to court. So if he brings her to the court when she's a bogeret, obligating him is now when he speaks in Motzi Shemra, he's being Motzi Shemra on a Bogeret. He's not being Motzi Shemra on a Ne'ara. Because his obligation, his infraction is at that moment of time when he comes to the Beitin. At that point, she's already a Bogeret. So that's the distinction here, that even though she is still subject to the penalties of a Nara Murasa, that's because her infraction took place while she was a Nara Murasa.
On the other hand, his problem here, or his infraction, is taking place when she's already a Bogeret, because he's speaking about her, he's lying about her when she is a Bogeret, and therefore he's only subject to the penalty of what a Bogeret would be, and that's not from the rules of Motzi Shemra. Tanro Banan. Nara Hamurasa Shizinta. A Nara Murasa, who has an extramarital affair, this is a girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half, who is halachically engaged, has an extramarital affair, Suklimata Al Petach Beit Avia. We stone her by the doorway to her father's house. This we also saw in Tana Shila, because we say Klomar, as if to say, Ru'u Gidulim Shigigaltem. Look at this girl that you brought up. Meaning, especially if we find out about it when she's in Beit Chamia, we bring her back to Beit Avia to say this has nothing to do with the house that she lives in now. This was the result or the influence of the house that she grew up in. And therefore she gets Skila at the gateway to her father's house. Ein la petach beitav. If she does not have a petach to her father's house, either because she doesn't have a father, or because her father doesn't have a house, so klima dal petach sharayir hahi. We stone her on the gateway of that city. Ubi'ir shiruba uvdei kochavim. In a city that the majority of the inhabitants are non-Jews, so klima dal petach beitin. Then we do it near the gateway to beitin. So now, there are a number of interesting items over here as to exactly where this takes place. First of all, it seems that if she has a father and a father has a house, then we bring her back and we stone her and we kill her in front of Petach Shar Beit Avia, because over there it has that siman that this is a result of the upbringing of her household. This is where the infraction took place because she was an Arusa, and therefore we bring her back there to publicize the issue. On the other hand, if there is no Petach Beit Avia, and there's no Av, and therefore we can't carry out that part of the psukim, then we bring her to Petach Sharair, again, which is a public place in the city that she had the infraction in. And therefore, we bring her to the Petach Sharair in order to penalize her over there. In a city that's Rubah Uvdei Kochavim, then the point is lost there, because then the publicity of the punishment is basically for people that have no Shaychut to Yadut, because they're Rubah Uvdei Kochavim. So there we move it to the Shara Beitin, because that's where the Jews are gathered, that's where it's important in terms of the Jews. Now, what's interesting here, and Tosafot already raises this, is that, in general, the stoning or the executions took place outside of the cities. And, therefore, how could it be Petach Shar Beitin? If Beitin's in the city, how come it has to be outside the city? So Tosafot brings two possibilities as to what the answer is. One possibility is that we really do. That means Petach Shar Beitin doesn't mean literally at the Shar of the Beitin, but where the executions of Beitin take place. Now, they give space between the Petach Shar Beitin and the actual executions, as Rashi explains over here, so these shouldn't look like a Beitin Katola. That shouldn't look like a killer Beitin that they want to kill, or that's their job, is to kill people. That's one reason. Others learn that the reason is that it gives us time between the sentencing and the execution for people to think if there's any possibility or limud zchut on the individual, so there's a slight delay tactic in having the execution space be away from the Beitin itself. Tosafot brings another interesting answer and says that Be'ir Sheruba Uvdei Kochavim, then that city doesn't have the regular status of a city of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. And that is, walled cities in Eretz Yisrael have an additional level of Kedusha that's found in the Mishnayot in the beginning of Kelim. For instance, they have to send out the Mitzorah. Mitzorah that's in that city has to go outside of that walled city. But Tosafot suggests, and he proves this from Mitzorah as well, is that when a city has the majority of inhabitants be non-Jews, it does not have a classification of a walled city with Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. It loses its status. And therefore, in that case, you could actually have the execution be done in the city and not outside the city, because it does not maintain that Kedusha, because it's Ir Sheruba Uvdei Kochavim. So Tosafot solves that problem, or what seemingly is a contradiction between Petach Shar Beitin and normally what is seen to be execution at the city, by one of those two answers. And now Gemara continues with the Braita, Kiyotze Badavar. Similarly, Ataomer, Hoeved Ovidat Kochavim, person who worships Avodah Zarah, Suklimo Tal Shar Shavadbo. He gets stoned by the gate of the city by where he did the Avodah Zarah. Not literally the Shar of where the Avodah Zarah was, but the Shar of the city. Ubiir Shiroba Ovde Kochavim, in a city that has majority inhabitants be Ovde Kochavim, Suklimo Tal Petach Beitin. Then again, they stone the individual by the entrance to the Beit Din. Menahan Emile. How do we know that that's the case? How do we know where the execution should be done? The Tan Rabbanan. Sharecha ze shar sha'avad bo. Because the Pasuk says, Sharecha. And Sharecha is the place where he worshipped the Avodah Zarah. Atahomer Shar Shavad Bo. How do you know that? How do you know that's the Shar that he did the Avodah Zarah? Oeinu Ela Shar Shinidon Bo. Maybe it's the Shar in which he was sentenced. So if he was taken to Beit Din in another city, maybe the Shar means the Shar, the city where he was sentenced. Who says it's the Shar where he worshipped? Ne'emar Sharecha Lamato. Ve'ne'emar Sharecha Lamalo. It says Sharecha twice in the Parsha Avodah Zarah. Ma Sharecha Amur Lamalo, Shar Shavad Bo. The Sharecha that is utilized in the Pasuk above, which is describing the infraction. We'll read it in a second. There, it's clearly talking about the Shar where he did the Avodah Zarah. Zarah Sharecha Amur Lamata. So too the Shar that is mentioned below in the sentencing, Shar Shavad Bo. It must be the Shar where he worshipped. Davar Acher. And another thing we learn out is, Sharecha, your Shear, Velo Sharei Ovdei Kochavim. And not the Shar of an Oved Kochavim. So the Gemara here is referencing to the psukim that are found in Dvarim Chav Gimel. And over there, it says with regards to an individual that goes to worship Avodah Zarah, it says, Ki matzei bikir b'cha, b'achad shearecha, asher Hashem lokecha nuten lach, ish o isha asher yaset ha rabbeni Hashem lokecha la'avur brito, v'yelech v'yavod Elohim acherim, mishtachavu lehem, v'leshemesh l'reach l'chol tzva shemayim shalot tziviti. So clearly there, b'achad shearecha is referencing the Shar where they're doing the Avodah Zarah. Because you're finding someone who is doing Avodah Zarah, and it's talking about where they're doing the Avodah Zarah, that you find this person doing this. Then, subsequent to that, it says in Pasukei, Votseita de Ishahu, o et Aishahi, Asher asu et Devar Arazeh, El Shearecha, Taishu et Aishahu, Skaltem Bamanim Vameitu. And then they get the punishment of Skila. That Shearecha, the Gemara says, is referencing the previous Shearecha. Just like the previous Shearecha meant the Shar, where they did the Avodah Zarah, the Shar here, so too, the Shar where they're put to death is in the gateway to the city where they did the Avodah Zarah. And similar to the punishment of the Nara Murasa, we can say the same thing over here, which is both the publicity about the issue because the Chait was done here, but also some of the responsibility for the Chait is that this city allowed something like this to take place. Whether it's because the culture of the city, whether it's because of the education of the city, or whether it's because people look the other way, here where there's an individual who's worshipping Avodah Zarah in their city. And in some way, or some distant way, they have a slight responsibility over here, and therefore the punishment should be done by the city, and not by the place where the sentencing took place. In addition to that, the Gemara reads the possessive form of Sharecha to mean your Sharim, and not the Sharah are of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, Ha'afikte, you already utilized the word Sharecha, you already used it for this quasi-gzera shalva, how can you use now Sharecha to teach you both dinim? Im came lemakara shar. It could have just said shar. Why does it say she'arecha? Shvaminatarte. That you can learn both things out of the pasuk. Where it says, ashkechan avodat kochavim. So now we know that's the case by avodah zarah. Nara murasa minolan. How do you know that by nara murasa that we bring her to the shar, the ear of where the infraction took place, where the extramarital affair took place and execute her there? How come we don't do it by the place of the Beit Din? Samaribo, gamar petach mi petach. Umipetach mishar umishar misharecha. So they say multi-layered, quote unquote, gzeira shava. Rashi calls it an asmachta drabonim ba'alma. It's just a hint midrabanan to the din that's over here because of these multi-layers. Because it says here by nara amu urasa, notziu nara el petach betavia, skulan sheira bavanim vameta. So there we see the word petach that is mentioned by petach betavia. By the mishkan, in Parshat Naso, when it's describing the items that the Bnei Gershuni carry, it says over there, Vet Kalea Chatzer, Vet Masach Petach Shara Chatzer, and the screen that was at the doorway, the entranceway to the Chatzer. So it uses the word Petach and Shar in the same phrase, teaching you that there's a correlation, connection between Petach and Shar. So Petach Bat De Beit Avia that is mentioned by Nara Murasa. Then you have by the Mishkan, the Masach is called Petach Shar. And then you take the Shar from there and connect it to the Shar that we found by Avodah Zarah. And that Shar to Sharecha. And just like by Sharecha, by Avodah Zarah means the Shar of the city where the infraction took place, where the Avodah Zarah took place. So too by Nara Murasa, there it's the gate of the city where the extramarital affair took place. Tan Rabbanan. Motzi Shemra Luke Benotein Me'asela. When it comes to Motzi Shemra, this individual brings the woman to court and says that Lomad said the bitcha betulim, and we find out he was lying. Then he gets malkot, and he has to pay 100 sela. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lukot loke, mikol makom. I agree with you to get malkot no matter what. Mea sela, the punishment of the money, baal notain. If he already had bia with his wife, then he has to pay the 100 selah. Lo baal, eino notain. Whereas if he didn't have bia, he doesn't have to pay the mea selah. So the Tanna Gamma sees Motzi Shamra as being an infraction that this individual spoke improperly about the woman. Since he spoke improperly about the woman, he's punished both with malkot and with the monetary penalty. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says that the monetary penalty depends on the action of the man. If he was already boel her, if he had bia with her and consummated the marriage, then he's subject to the monetary penalty. On the other hand, if he has yet to consummate the marriage with bia, then he's not subject to monetary penalty, even though it's seemingly he's subject to the malkot over here. So Gemara says here, kamifligei beplukto de Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov v'Rabbanon. Seemingly, this machloge between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda is similar to a machloge which we're going to see in tomorrow's daf. The Gemara will finally ask, where is this from? This machloge is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov the Rabbanon. But their machloge is whether Motzi Shemra applies even without bia, or does it only apply with bia? And we'll see in tomorrow's daf that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that only if there is bia is there a punishment of Motzi Shemra. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe ben baal, ben lo baal, that there is a punishment of Motzi Shemra. So now the Gemara is saying, seemingly the Tanna Kamma here and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing along the same lines. V'achi kamar, Motzi Shemra lokev inotein me'asela. That Motzi Shemra gets malkot and pays the me'asela, ben baal, ben shelo baal. Whether there was bia or no, there was no bia, ki rabbanon. That's similar to the position of the rabbanon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Lokot, lokeh, mikol makom. Malkot you get no matter what. Me'asela, when it comes to the monetary payment, baal notain, lo baal e notain. If there was bia by the husband, then you pay it. Lo baal notain, ki Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That is similar to the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that only by the case of bia are you subject to all of these penalties. So now, according to the Tanna Kamma, and according to the Chachamim, the Parsha Motzi Shemra says, v'yisru oto. That you get malkot, that's the chiddush of Motzi Shemra, that there is malkot over here. So v'yisru oto is the malkot, and the payment is mentioned in the parsha. Nowhere in the parsha does it say whether bia or no bia in there. Therefore, they say it applies across the board. Even though we're going to see in tomorrow's daf that the parsha does sound like there was bia over there, the Chachamim are going to reinterpret some of those statements along the way to say there was no bia. The other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, if there was bia, and that's the pashtut of parsha over there, that the husband has bia with her and then comes into court and says, lo matzati bitcha betulim, I had bia with her and she wasn't a bitula. And Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing. Okay, lo matzati bitcha betulim, therefore, there's parsha Motzi Shemra is not relevant over here. So then why does Rabbi Yehuda say you get malkot? We'll see in tomorrow's daf that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov thinks there's no malkot and there's no monetary payment. So why does Rabbi Yehuda all of a sudden here say there is malkot? So Rashi claims the reason is because malkot don't come from Motzi Shemra. The malkot that are given over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, come from Mishum Azarat Lo Teleich Rachil Be'amecha. They come from the Azara that one may not go around and tell Lashon Hara, tell improper things about people. And therefore, the malkot here are not from the Parsha Motzi Shemra. And so what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, malkot you still get, because they're not part of the Parsha Motzi Shemra. Therefore, baal or lo baal, you're right, you get malkot, because Lo Teleich Rachil Be'amecha is not subject to that qualification. Then the monetary payment, which is part of Motzi Shemra, is subject to that qualification. So now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that you don't get malkot in either of these cases. But Rabbi Yehuda here seemingly says you do get malkot. So Rashi explains the difference in their opinions based on Rabbi Yehuda's shita in other places, which is Rabbi Yehuda says you can get malkot for a lav shein bo maaseh, a lav that has no action in it, active violation in it. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's still subject to the penalty of malkot. So Rabbi Yehuda the shita day says, here, lo teleich rachil b'amecha, even though he has no action in violating that, simply speaking, that's enough to land him with malkot, because Rabbi Yehuda l'shitato, please, number one, the lav is not part of Motzi Shemra, and number two is lav shein bo maaseh, you get malkot for. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, on the other hand, it's not clear where he thinks the lav comes from, but whether he thinks the lav is from Motzi Shemra, and therefore they're not subject to the lav at all, or whether he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that the lav comes from lo teleich rachil b'amecha, but he simply believes that you don't get malkot for lav shein bo maaseh. He believes that there's no malkot and no monetary payment. But fundamentally, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agree that the Parsha Motzi Shemra is only said about bia. So the Gemara is suggesting that this machlok between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda is similar to this machlok between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Ikadamre, some suggest that Kulak Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that the entire machlok between the Tanagam and Rabbi Yehuda is in Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position. Rachi Kamar, Hamotzi Shemra Loke, Venotein Me'asela, Behu Shiba'al. That Hamotzi Shemra gets Malkot and pays Me'asela, that's only if there was Bi'ah. And that's the position of the Tanagama, only when there is Bi'ah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lukot Loket. That's okay, as far as Malkot or Maseren Mikol Makom. Whether it's Bi'ah or no Bi'ah. It's actually already explained to us, because Lo Te'elech Rachel Be'amecha governs the Malkot, and therefore it's not subject to whether there is Bi'ah or no Bi'ah. According to him, whether there is Bi'ah or no Bi'ah, Lo Te'elech Rachel Be'amecha is independent of the Parsha of Motzi Shemra. So that's the way that Rashi explains it. Tosafot has issues with Rashi's explanation, partly because of the upcoming questions of the Gemara, and therefore the Rabbeinu Tam explains that the Gemara over here is talking about, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Malkot or Makat Mardut, which are Malkot Midrabanan. Even Rabbi Yehuda over here says you get Malkot, and these are not Malkot Midoraita, but rather Malkot Midrabanan. He first of all disagrees with Rashi, that Lo Te'elech Rachel B'Amech is actually the source for Malkot. And number two is he says that the Malkot we're speaking about here are not Malkot Midoraita, but Malkot Midrabanan. And even though in general, as Rashi says over here, Rabbi Yehuda says you can get Malkot for Lav Shem B'Maseh, but the Tosafot says is that Motzi Shemra is an exception, because the Pasuk or the Psukim make it clear that the Parsha Motzi Shemra, V'Yisruel Tov, which is the source for Malkot, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, which is in the Parsha Motzi Shemra, is subject to the qualification of Bi'ah that is found in the Parsha. Even though it's a Lav Shem B'Maseh, nevertheless, over here, that's only true when there is Bi'ah. If there is no Bi'ah, then there is no Malkot. So it's not just because you need a Maisa here by the individual to have Bi'ah, but it's simply because the Parsha qualifies in that way. So Gemara asks, V'sav Rabbi Yehuda Lukot Luke Mikom Makom? Does Rabbi Yehuda really think that you get Malkot no matter what? V'atanya? Don't we have a bright? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Baal Luke, Lo Baal En Luke. If he has Bi'ah, then he gets Malkot. Doesn't have Bi'ah, he doesn't get Malkot. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Luke Makat Mardut Midrabanan. So according to Rashi, this is a reversal of the Gemara's position until now, who thought that Rabbi Yehuda got Malkot Midoraita. Now Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is saying the Loke that we mentioned over here was Makat Mardut Midrabanan. It's only Malkot Midrabanan in order to force this person to act properly, or because of his improper action, the Chachamim are penalizing him, even though the Torah did not penalize him. But we're not talking about Malkot Midoraita. Whereas according to Tosafot, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is really a clarification of what Rabbi Yehuda meant. Rabbi Yehuda meant originally Makat Mardut. We misunderstood it to mean real Makot. Therefore, we bring along Rav Nachman Yitzchak to explain to us, based on the question, that we're talking about Makat Mardut Midrabanan. Now, this solution, so Rashi now believes that the original assumption of the Gemara is that we're talking about Malkot Doraito. Then we brought Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, who says we're talking about Malkot Midrabanan, and that's how we reconcile between the two positions of Rabbi Yehuda. And then we have another opinion from Rav Papa, and according to Rashi, that means we reverse what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak just said, that it was Malkot Midrabanan, and we go back to saying that it's Malkot Doraita like the original, and he'll reinterpret the situation. On the other hand, according to Tosafot, all the opinions believe that it's Malkot Midrabanan. That's the Gemara's assumption up front. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was simply coming to explain that, and Rav Papa agrees in the end that the Malkot are only Malkot Midrabanan. He just doesn't like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's explanation, because then in the Braita that we just quoted, when it says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Baal Loke means Midoraita, Eino Baal Lo Loke is Midoraita, you don't get Malkot, but you still get Malkot Midrabanan. Why do you express it that way? So Rav Papa brings a different way to explain the Braita. But he still believes that these Malkot are Midrabanan. On the other hand, you can clearly say that Rashi sees, says, the top Rashi, the top of Mem Amud Aleph, when it says, Rav Papa Amar, Dola Malkot Mamash. We're talking about Malkot Midoraita. So my Baal Loke Diktani Hotam. That Braita that we brought that says you only get Malkot by the case of Baal. How come that's different than what we brought before? Because that's Mamon. That's talking about the monetary payment. Where it says, V'kardei leMamon Malkot? Since when do you call the monetary penalties? When do you call them Malkot? Where it says, in? That is the case. V'hatz nan. Because we have a Mishnah in Arachin that supports this idea. Homer chetzir ki alai notain chetzir ko. Person who says, half of my value I should be give as kadosh to the Mikdash, then he gives half of his value. Erki is based on the tables in the Torah that are determined by a person's gender and age. So he says, I'm going to pay half of what that value is mina Torah. That's totally fine, and he pays half. Yosi Rav Yehuda Omer, loke, v'notein erech shalim. He is penalized, he gets malkot, and pays the full amount. Loke amai. Why does he get malkot? He didn't say anything wrong over here. Samra papa loke be'erech shalim. It's not malkot plus he pays the full amount. No. The malkot, or the penalty that he's getting over here, the punishment that he's getting, is he has to pay the full erech. My taima. Why does he have to pay the full payment over here? Gzeira chatzi erko ata erech chetzio. Because we worry about the fact, chatzi erko or chatzi erki is a fine thing to say, and in Ochanami you would pay 50% in that case. The problem is, if he says erech chetzio or erech chetzi alai, if he says the value of half of me, or the erech of half of me should be brought, over there, in that case, you don't bring 50%, because erech chetzio avili eiver sheneshamat luya bo. Because when you say erech about a part of the body that is integral or fundamental to the existence of the body, then we esteem it as if you said the whole body. So clearly, half a body or half a person will not survive without the other half. It's fatal. So therefore, if a person says erech chetzio, the value of erech of half that person, that's not a meaningful statement. It's as if he said erech of the full person. He has to pay 100% in that case. The other case, if he says 50% of the erech of that person, that works. So it depends where you place the 50%. If the 50% is of the value of that individual, that works. On the other hand, if you say pay the erech of 50% of the individual is the object of the 50%, over there it doesn't work and you would have to pay the full amount because you're saying it about half a person. Half a person is neshamat buyabo. Person's dependent on that. It's as if it's spread to the whole body. Or if you said about the whole body, you have to pay the full erech. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, because of that possible mix-up, anytime you say 50% or a percentage erech, which would have been fine, nevertheless, we penalize you and say pay the whole thing because of the possibility of cases where it's reversed, where you say erech of a percentage of the individual, where there you would be chayav in the entire erech. But you see from that Mishnah and Arachin, that sometimes the malkot is not about real malkot, but about a monetary penalty. And that's what is being said here by Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that the penalties that are in the parsha are only when there's biyah. Like the parsha says, we take it literally. Therefore, the payment of the knas is only when there's biyah. No payment of knas when there's no biyah. That's what it means. Ba loke, eno bal, eno loke. On the other hand, the statement before is about the malkot. And as we saw before, Rabbi Yehuda has an independent source from Malkot that is not tied down to the din of Motzi Shemra. And because of that, he grants Malkot. Now, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov could agree with that, but he just doesn't think there's Malkot by Lav Shem B'Masa. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov completely disagree and say that the source from Malkot is the Yisroel Otol, and therefore he's not subject to Malkot, because it's subject to the same Baal and Eno Baal that the whole Parsha is subject to. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 8 lines down on the top of Memvov, Amud Aleph.